You are listening to Higher Ed Social, episode 75. I'm Logan, and this week we talk to Wesley Huff, a fifth-year graduate student in the PhD of Mathematics program at the University of Kentucky. We talk with Wesley about his experiences as a teaching assistant, the structure of his department, as well as what it's like being both an instructor and a student. He also tells us about his doctoral research and does an amazing job of explaining it in a way that anyone can understand. We finished the show discussing Wesley's AirDosh number and his future plans. We hope you enjoy this episode of Higher Ed Social. It's nice to meet you, Wesley.
Yeah, welcome. Nice to meet you
too. I'm Logan. I have a beard, and it doesn't have a Twitter account yet, but it could one day. I don't think it will get big enough to where it gets its own Twitter, though.
I don't think so either.
That's us. I'm joking about a past guest.
Yeah, we had someone on the show who has a separate Twitter account for his beard.
Yes. That's funny. And that's Michael Finan, if you, Finan, whatever.
Are you plugging our own show?
Yes. You can go check out episode, whatever episode he was on, once you get there. But anyway, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome.
It's the second time we've said that. Shows how random the show is, but...
we're just excited.
Yes. So we've come to the time where you kind of tell us about you and what you do and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, my name is Wesley Huff. It's written H-O-U-G-H, and it's pronounced Huff like rough and tough. I am neither of those two things unless you choose to cheat on one of my exams.
Oh, I thought I thought it was Wesley Hoag.
No, it's Huff. It's funny because people will look at it and then they'll try to pronounce it all different ways. Is it Hoff like cough, or, you know,
isn't Hoth like a thing you land on with tauntauns and speeders and stuff anyway?
So. Maybe I'm going to confess that I've never actually watched all those shows, all those movies all the way through. Don't hold it against me.
Oh, it's okay. I don't hold it against you.
As most people are like, what? You've never seen all of Star Wars?
Jackie's only seen one of them.
I'm with you. So we're together in this boat. Yes. So don't worry about it.
It's not so bad. But anyway, so I am a fifth-year graduate student in the PhD of Mathematics program here at the University of Kentucky in Lexington.
Oh, Wildcats.
So yeah, the Wildcats. Yeah, whatever.
Sorry, one of my...
School pride.
One of my
academic side of things, sports are whatever.
Hey, I feel you, dude. I feel you.
So, let's see, what do I want to say? I am originally from Peru, Indiana, which is like north central Indiana. It's an hour and a half north of Indianapolis, like straight north. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Hanover College in southern Indiana, you guessed it, Hanover, Indiana. For 4 years, and I double majored in math and economics there. And I did a lot of theater stuff, so I didn't have a major in it, but I had a scholarship. So I worked in the costume shop a lot there, and I ran the costume shop for 2 years. And that kind of gave me a nice little creative outlet while I was doing my math and my economics. And then
admissions come to you all the time because it's like, oh, look, you're the great balance of math and art. Like, look, you can do both.
You'd think they'd do that, but no, they didn't really.
Huh.
That's interesting.
So.
They always cover students like that.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess it's because I kind of like a lot of people knew that I was really busy and I got involved in a lot of stuff. Like my senior year of undergrad, I was the head of the budgeting committee for student organizations. And so like I had a lot of notoriety for that.
Well, yeah.
Because it's like, oh, the student organization, they want to get some of the leftover sweat funds at the end of the year. Well, go find Wesley Huff. He's the one who knows how to take care of all that. So. that was kind of fun.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, it was just kind of, I don't know. I really enjoyed going to a small school like that. I had also applied and got into Rose Holman Institute of Technology, but they offered me significantly less to go there. And it was also like, I had a lot of friends in theater and speech and English and stuff when I was in high school. And I didn't want to like miss out on that by going to a primarily engineering and science school. So I applied to Hanover and got in, and that's where I wanted to go just because it was like the classical, like American college education environment. And so
go liberal arts. Yay.
Yeah. I was
big fan of liberal arts. Yay. Wow. What a path.
Yeah.
Been all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, what are you doing now? Are you schooling full time? Are you also working?
It's kind of a weird scenario. So like, I have all of my coursework done, and so I'm just technically I'm working on my dissertation, but at the University of Kentucky, all math graduate students have we call it a full-time teaching assistant position, but it's not really full-time. It's 20 hours a week,
right.
But it's like we are responsible for 2 to 3 groups of students. For some of us teach actual lectures where like we get full control of the class. We write the homework, we write the exams, we write the quizzes, we write the syllabus and stuff and call all the shots. And then some of us do what we call recitations, which are like for the large, let's say, calculus lectures, the students will get together in groups of about 200 and go listen to a professor talk for an hour, 3 days a week.
Right.
And then on the off days, they come see a graduate student in groups of 25 or 30. And we kind of like coach them through practice problems and like do a lot of group work stuff to kind of reinforce the ideas.
Right.
So those are kind of like the two main types of teaching that go on. And it really depends on the semester. We have a lot more recitation stuff going on, but there's plenty of lecture opportunities.
Do you have a favorite?
I personally have always been like a teacher at heart. Like you could ask anyone in my family and they'll say, yes, Wesley's wanted to teach ever since I don't even know when. And so I always prefer to like have the full control of the classroom because I get to do what I think is best for the students.
Right.
When it comes to recitations, you're kind of at the whim of whatever your guiding professor wants to do.
Right.
So sometimes they may want to do one thing in the classroom and I'll say, I'll do that because you're my boss, but that doesn't mean that I want to.
So how many students are typically in one of your lectures?
So there's kind of a cap and they won't let graduate students teach more than 35 students at a time. It's kind of the generic rule. There's no real reason for that other than that's just what the university has decided.
Right. And I wouldn't want more than that. That's a lot of numbers. so what classes do you lecture? Sorry, I'm nerding out a little bit.
No, it's fine. So like this semester is kind of special because I only have one group of students. Normally you get two to four, depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This semester I'm kind of lucked out because I'm doing a special graduate certificate in college teaching and learning kind of thing. So it's like extra coursework to like get this extra credential that says, hey, you're really good at teaching.
Right.
And so we had to do a culminating practicum experience for that. So my one group of students, I meet with them every day of the week. And I am both their lecture instructor on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and their recitation leader on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So, like, I have one group that's currently 32 students, and I see them 50 minutes every single day. And the course is kind of interesting because it's Calculus 2 for Life Sciences.
That's interesting.
So it's, like, all biology and pre-med majors, and I'm kind of teaching them some of the mathematical techniques and thought processes that they might encounter in their job later in life.
I've done that before. My degree's in biology, so.
Okay. So you know the Calc 1 and Calc 2 for life sciences. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But
I stopped at Calc 2 because I had enough calculus.
Well, that's usually what we do. These students, they come through and they take the Calc 1 and the Calc 2 version, then they're done.
Yeah.
And they can take other stuff if they want to, but this is all that's required for their major usually.
Yeah, I can only handle so many differentials.
Yes.
The math podcast.
Yeah. Well, I had a really awesome professor. So I was really lucky in that sense. It was an honors level. So it was a really small class and it was cool and helpful. I think my favorite story from that particular professor, my best friend Tyler was also in the class with me. And he was your typical computer science major who just really didn't care. But he's like a super genius. So, you know, he'd go in and, you know, blow me out of the water where I had to study all the time. But the funny thing is one day he came in and he just didn't care. And it was a quiz and he had no idea how to solve this problem. So he just wrote 42. And if you get that joke,
yes, I do.
Jackie, I doubt you do, I guess, because you're not laughing. But essentially, it's from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. 42 is the answer to everything.
Oh, I have seen that movie.
Yes.
I haven't read the book, though.
It is the ultimate answer to everything. And the professor gave him full credit and wrote under it, "I will never do this for you again."
Okay.
He's a great professor. Like great professor.
Yeah. Have you had anyone answer a question with 42?
No, not necessarily. But I've gotten some pretty funny answers out of stuff, or they'll answer the question in like a really roundabout way that I'm like, you know what? You're right. You did not do this even remotely close to the way I had it intended. But what you did works. So here, have some full credit, even though it's completely left of center.
I appreciate that you do that, because there's
not all calculus professors are like that.
Because people's brains work differently to solve problems. Like, that's why, like, some people, it's like why we have technology and like awesome things. Mm. And like when you aren't doing it like the way that we learned in class, it's really, I don't know, it's frustrating. Okay, off my horse now. I'm done.
So, what's your dissertation over in calculus 2 level talk here?
Okay.
Yeah, so, bring it down.
Okay, so there's an area, there are two kind of areas of math that I'm really interested in. And the first one is, depending on who you talk to, is either called combinatorics or discrete mathematics. And it's primarily,
I've heard of the second one.
Okay. It's both of them, they're basically the same thing, and it's just creatively counting mathematical structures of interest. So something that a lot of people kind of like indirectly work with but may not think about it is what we call a combinatorial graph. And that's just going to be like a set of points and like line segments connecting them.
Hmm.
So a lot of people have thought about situations where like I'm trying to model the way planes fly between major cities. And so you can think of each vertex is what we call it on a graph is going to be like a major city. And then you're going to connect two major cities if there is a flight that goes between them.
The vertexes and, are the dots.
Yeah, the vertices are the dots. And then we call edges are the line segments between them. And so you have these kind of objects that are really interesting because they have this really nice way of encoding relative location.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if two things are adjacent, like you can plot them next to each other on a graph. If they're far apart, not.
Right.
So I work in this kind of sort of area that does kind of a little bit of this kind of graph theory stuff and like tries to answer questions about these particular structures. And then there's another area of math that some people have heard of, but it sounds kind of weird. It's called topology.
Yeah.
And it has to do with the arrangement of space. So the classic example, even though any mathematicians who are listening are going to cringe at this, but the example I always like to use is you can imagine how if I had like, let's say, a coffee mug made out of Play-Doh, can you imagine like if I squished it just right, I could like remold it very carefully, not breaking it, and turn it into a donut?
Right.
Like I could squish down the actual cut part and push the extra clay. And so in some sense, those two things are the same thing because they're like, they're fundamentally, it's like a hole and there's stuff wrapped around it. So the area of topology is like concerned with here are these mathematical objects I can create. How can I like warp them without really breaking them and see what's the fundamental structure? So the stuff I do is kind of the intersection of those two. I take these graphs, I make some type of space out of it, and then I study this space using these different techniques.
And people say math is boring.
Yeah,
well, I know. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And I really like it because it's very visual. Like I'm a very visually minded person. I think that's why I ended up in mathematics is because I can write it down. And I can stare at it.
Right.
Not everybody, but quite a few people have seen that famous scene from The Big Bang Theory where Sheldon and Raj are just sitting there staring at the board doing research. And it's like a 5-minute montage of just like the stuff going. I was like, that's what math is. Like you just stare at it for a while.
Yeah.
But the stuff I get to do. I can draw a picture and then I can like show you the picture and be like, this is the thing I'm thinking about today.
That's the thing that I've always found interesting, especially when it comes to science, when it comes to when it comes to both physicists and mathematicians, because they are really similar because it's all math. It's just a different way of thinking about it. It amazes me how people can just sit and think and come up with these, like, you know, formulas, equations, different ways of thinking about things. And it's, and the math becomes the way of thinking. And of course, math is the language of the universe, and, you know, there's order to everything. And I just got really deep and my mind blew. And that's usually how it goes. Why I could never do, I've never been bad at math. I've been pretty good, but I don't know. It's coming up with those kinds of ways of thinking has always been hard for me. I don't know why. I was always more of a experimental kind of guy. And that's what people think about when they think about science is, you know, experiments and this. They don't think about proofs and all that kind of fun stuff. So, you know, I've seen people, you know, like segment their departments even within, you know, the sciences, you know, the science and mathematics, not sciences. But it really is science. It's just a different way of experimentation and observation. So, I mean, a proof is a scientific method, just in a different kind of sense.
How is it organized over Kentucky? Are you part of the sciences? Is it a separate mathematics department?
What does that look like? So we have the mathematics department. We have a separate statistics department. I was told back in the day, I think they were joined at one point, but they aren't anymore. Like, we actually used to actually share a building, because at University of Kentucky, we don't have like a math building per se. We have the Patterson Office Tower, and like certain levels of the tower are like the math floors.
Lord, we would not want the mathematicians and the statisticians in the same room. Jeez.
Yeah, we used to be on the seventh floor. We've always had the seventh floor, and we used to share the eighth floor with the statisticians. And apparently, they didn't have enough space, so they moved across campus, and now they have their own entire floor in a separate building.
It's not them; it's you.
Yeah, I guess. So we now share with
you. Are no longer statistically significant.
Yeah. So, but all the sciences are basically split up. So like there is a biology department and they have a particular building they occupy. Chemistry and physics both occupy the same kind of building.
Are you all in your own college? Are you all part of the same college though?
We're all part of the College of Arts and Sciences, to the best of my knowledge. Now we have the College of Engineering, which is separate.
Right.
And then UK is really big in the medical field. So we have the College of Medicine and Pharmacology, you know, and there's a lot of that going on. But for the most part, the part I interact with is the College of Arts and Sciences, like the really like stereotypical college environment and part of the school.
Right. How's life in Lexington?
Nice. It's not too particularly big.
Yeah.
It's sufficiently large that you have two of everything. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of nice, because if you don't like the one Chili's, you can go across the city and go to the one on the other side or something like that. So
and you have Kentucky Kingdom.
Yeah. Well, that's, we don't have it in Lexington, but it's not that far away. It's over in Louisville. But you know,
wrong one.
That's an hour and 30 minutes down the road. So
that's the other school. Sorry.
Yeah.
I admit I always get them mixed up.
No, that's fine.
I end up going to Louisville a lot to, I go up there every now and then for Kentucky Kingdom. Last time I was in Lexington was probably like probably 10 years ago. I was in college.
Yeah.
So like 40 years ago?
Yeah. Something like that.
Logan just, he lines himself up like once every five episodes for me to make an old joke and I have to jump on it.
Okay. Take it while you can, Jack.
Well, yeah. I'm in Nashville, so I'm not that far away from you.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are close.
The thing that I love about, like, Kentucky, like, has one interstate, and it goes north-south. And then...
You've got 75 and 65, and that's it.
And then the rest of it is just, like, random four-lane highways of nothing.
Yes. Yes, it's very... I like it because, you know, I'm originally from Indiana and it's flat cornfields as far as the eye can see. And then as soon as you hit the Cincinnati area on your way to Lexington, all of a sudden, boom, there's these hills.
Right.
And it's like, oh, it's actually pretty to look at now.
Literally going across the river, it's just a huge hill. And then you're just in hills the whole way.
Yeah.
That's the last time I went to.
Out being in New England.
Well, you're in New England and you have snow.
Just once a year.
Lexington gets more snow than we do.
Yeah.
See, we're in that funky place where it's snow or freezing rain, but they're just north of that in the usually all snow area. So
yeah,
you guys get a lot of good stuff up there. So what are you planning to do? Like, are you planning to teach?
Yeah, so that's the goal long term. I'm actually applying for academic jobs right now. I'm looking for tenure track assistant professor positions at a combination of either a smaller liberal arts school or some type of regional comprehensive university. I'm not all that interested in a position where like it's a publish or perish environment where like if I'm not churning out a research paper twice a year, then I'm going to like lose my job because they're not going to give me tenure or something like that.
You're looking for a teaching university.
Yeah. I'm looking more for a teaching university. I don't mind doing a little bit of research, especially if it like I can incorporate undergraduate students into it. That I would really appreciate. So there's kind of like this range of schools I'm applying to. I was talking to Jackie about this previously, but like I have about, I think on my list of places to apply, I have on the order of 85-ish or so jobs that are I'm interested in. And just today, I clicked submit on the 40th application. So I'm like halfway there.
Nice.
Like, we'll have to wait and see how it goes.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeesh. I mean, it's like that time. When you're getting ready to like apply for jobs, you find all of them. I've been there.
And it's like you kind of like throw your darts all at the wall at once and hope that one of them sticks.
Yeah. Right? So I assume just that you don't have to say where, but I assume you're looking outside Kentucky. Like,
oh, yeah.
I can't imagine you found 80 jobs inside Kentucky.
No, there aren't.
Do you have a preference as to where you like want to be in the country?
Not exactly. So a lot of my family is in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio area. So I would not mind being not terribly far away from them. So something in the kind of like the Midwest, I would be very, very happy with, but that doesn't mean that I couldn't be happy elsewhere. I've always been kind of a really content person that like, if I find something I'm looking for, then I can move there and like make that my own and really, really like it.
Right.
So I have a map hanging on my wall of all the schools that I'm intending to apply to and vice versa. It's just kind of funny to see all the little dots show up. And
did you literally throw darts on the wall then?
No.
It's a higher ed job.
It kind of looks like that, but it's not darts.
Good for you. Because I remember when I was applying for jobs and I was looking, I knew I wanted to be in the higher education. I was really nervous to leave my state. Like I didn't know where I wanted to be necessarily. I've never really done a lot of traveling in my lifetime. So I don't really know what these other cities are like.
Yeah.
And I was like really scared to do it. So good for you for being very ambitious and adventurous.
Indeed. So what do you want to teach? Do you want to teach in your research area or do you want to teach like any specific kind of thing?
I'm kind of like
whatever I can get a job for.
A little bit of that. So it's like, cause I went to a liberal arts school. So it's like, I kind of enjoy almost all parts of math.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't mind a stab at trying to teach each of the classes in turn at some point. Now, the discrete math and the topology stuff, discrete math is something that you can usually teach at pretty much any school.
Right.
Topology, like even the intro level stuff is the kind of thing that you have to have the right kind of school and the right kind of student body to be able to pull it off successfully.
Right.
So those are like the two classes that I would absolutely love to teach, but there's a wide variety of other things. And there are even certain kinds of like lower level service classes that I really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I double majored in economics in undergrad. So I haven't really touched that side since I've been in graduate school. So like There are a couple schools that I've run across in their job ads. They're looking for someone who can help them teach statistics and kind of like the service level courses to their social science majors, people who need to use some math in their day-to-day life, but like math is not the end-all be-all for them.
Right.
So to me, that I kind of really like that idea. I feel like having that liberal arts background helps me like connect with these students mm-hmm. because I've met several people who like did math exclusively and they can't really talk to anyone who's not interested in math for its own sake.
Right.
And I mean, I can talk and interact with those kind of people, but I can also be like, hey, here's this really cool thing that you can do that you would be interested in for this very specific reason, given your interests in studying whatever.
Yeah, as someone who works at a liberal arts university and kind of occasionally gets to hang out with the math department, I think you'd thrive pretty well at, you know, a school like mine. Mm-hmm. Belmont's
weird that Logan.
Well, I say that because you know, I don't know, our math professors are a lot like you. Mm-hmm. They're just full of energy and one of my favorite ones at Belmont, her and I actually did a video for the College of Science and Mathematics and her and I got to talking and she you know, I kind of asked her like, how did you like, you know, what's your approach to like teaching math? And she was like, you know, I try to teach students that math is not necessarily about the math because they'll just tell you, oh, I'll never use this in life. But it's not about the formulas and it's not about any of those kinds of things. It's about understanding logic and critical thinking. And she's like, you know, you use it for everything. She's like, I was great at English. And, you know, when I decided to major in math in college, my English teachers in high school were like, you're crazy. You're so good at writing. And she was like, no. The math has helped me in my writing, like the understanding of logic and argument and all of that kind of thing. She's like, I use it every day. I just used it the other day to talk my husband into going on a vacation he didn't want to go on. and I was like, oh, that's like magic. That is a magic quote. Yeah. I am putting it in a video. so yeah, it's pretty awesome. I you seem like that kind of guy. I think you'd do really well. And you said the magic word, I care about students, which is something that a lot of science professors, especially at big schools, don't like, they care more about their research than they do about students. They have grad assistants to do that.
Yeah. It's like teaching is an afterthought. It's like, I'll do it, but like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you, these people need your help like really badly and you should be nice to them.
Would you prefer a large classroom, like a large lecture style?
Definitely the smaller one because I really like to get to know my students individually. Like
your social talents would be wasted.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's kind of like that. One of the critiques I have is that like if I have a small classroom, I can learn all of your names and I can recognize you on sight, and like, and that's really important to me. And I make sure to like do that at the beginning of every semester. Like I have all these little memory tricks to pick up the names as quickly as possible. But just this week, my research advisor is actually out of town, so I'm covering one of his big calculus lectures, and it's just killing me because I'm like, I am in front of a room of like 180 students. They don't know me because I've only shown up for a couple days. Like they normally have a completely different professor. And it's like, I don't know any of them. I can't talk to any of them because it's like they all have this anonymity and it's like they're all hiding there.
Right.
And I'm just getting up doing my thing. And it's like, that's fine, but I need to be able to talk to you. And like, if I look out and I can see in a small classroom of like 20 students, and I see one student doesn't get it, I can stop and like be like, okay, what's going on here? But when you have 30 faces that are doing that in a group of 180, I just don't have the time. Like, you just don't have that personal relationship.
Exactly.
That I think is super important.
Yeah, name not a number.
Yay, small schools.
though, for a mathematician, you know, you might be closer to someone if they're a number. Sorry. Yeah. I'm trying to make a joke. They use letters and, hey, you know, we're past numbers, you know.
Yes. You transcend numbers.
You're like pie.
Yes, we're like pie. We are transcendental.
I got a pie joke in. Nice.
Good for, I'm so proud of you. Good for you. Doing yes. it was possible.
Yes. Oh, I feel so good. My nerdiness is happy.
So are you graduating then in December?
In May. So like the academic job search is a very long, it's like a year long process. You apply in the fall, if you're lucky. And so you apply to whatever. And then what starts to happen, at least in the math field, you apply in the fall. And then we have a big conference called the Joint Mathematics Meetings. And that's kind of a roving conference. But it's made up of the American Mathematical Society and the Mathematical Association of America, which is like the two big organizations. They get together and have this massive conference every January. And then, not most, but quite a few of the schools will call you up and say, hey, are you going to be at this conference? We'd like to talk to you. And so some of them will do that. Some of them will give you a phone interview. Some of them will give you a Skype interview. Some won't even talk to you. But usually you get some kind of initial rundown with them. Usually January-ish is when that first point of contact happens. Then if they like what they hear, see, or if they like what they interact with, then in, let's say, late February, March-ish, they'll call you onto campus for like an actual like in-person interview where they run you through the ringer for an entire day.
Yeah. You meet everybody and do presentations.
Yeah. And then what they will do is after that, then if they still like, and they usually only do that on-campus interview for like their top three choices or give or take. And then after that, that's when they decide who they're going to make the job offer to. And so it's like you start applying. Like my first application that I chose to complete was due September 30th. But like it's very common that you don't even know if you're going to have a job until like late March, May.
Wow.
So it's like nerve wracking because it's so long. And no matter how much prep work you do, you still have to just sit and wait on people to make up their minds.
And it's so weird because like you kind of have this like pressure to finish the application so fast. It's like, hurry up and wait. Like you finish the application, you hit submit, and now you just sit there. Yeah. It's like, all right, well, can't even call obnoxiously and be like, how's it going? Like, do you need anything else for me?
Yeah, because they're like, no, our application deadline's passed, but we fully do not intend to look at these until Thanksgiving.
So I do have a random question. Do you know what, random question is, do you know what the Erdos number is?
The Erdos number? Yes.
Do you know yours? Like,
I want to say -4. I believe
that's
minus
not bad.
Because I did a summer research experience for undergraduates a couple of years ago at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And one of the advisors for our program, I'm almost certain he had a 3. And so he's the closest connection that I know of. So I'm almost certain I have a 4.
So for our listeners that don't know what that is, because I obviously know what that is.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil it for our listeners. So who wants to explain what that is?
Have you heard of the Kevin Bacon number? There's this like idea. It's also based on the 7-6 degrees of separation idea that you pick like a famous person in a field and you kind of label them as the number 0. And then the Kevin Bacon number is measured as Kevin Bacon himself is 0. Anybody who has ever been in a movie with Kevin Bacon is Bacon number 1.
Got it.
Now, suppose I don't know. Let's say Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't even know if she's done a movie with him. But for example, suppose she had Kevin Bacon number 1. Now, somebody who did not do a movie with Kevin Bacon but did one with Gwyneth Paltrow would be Bacon number 2.
Got it.
And so on. So you kind of do this idea. And interestingly, this is actually a combinatorial graph problem because the question is, if every human is a vertex and you can connect people based on like – if they know each other or what worked on a paper together or whatever, there's this suggestion or this hypothesis that every person is connected to every other person by no more than 6 people.
So it's 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what it is. Exactly the same thing.
With Paul Erdos, who was a mathematician who actually did a whole lot of collaboration with people. And thus, it's actually, I think it was on Nova or something that I heard it. It's a literal thing that mathematicians like to do. They all give themselves a number based off of how many degrees they've been separated from his research. I wikied it because I wasn't sure if I was right with the number, like the name, because I knew it was like Erdos or Erdos or something Erdish like that.
Is how I've always heard it.
And so he published 1,525 papers.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's nuts. And he would work with people, like people just ask him, hey, can you help me with this? And that's how he got on everything.
Yeah.
Super genius guy.
Yeah. And so because he's kind of the center of all mathematics, at least the way we currently run it. So the question is, what's your Erdős number? And people who have very, very low, like 1 and 2, like they'll put that on their CV. And that's actually like a mark of greatness kind of
thing.
Wow. Yep.
But, so it's like a pretty well-recognized thing.
Yeah. In mathematics, it is. Like everybody knows what your Erdős number means.
And I just barely remembered that. But I figured if there was something I was going to ask a mathematician, hey, that seemed like the thing to ask.
That's okay.
So Wesley, you said did you say yours was 4?
I believe mine's 4. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty standard number to have, I think. Okay. To the best of my knowledge, I think last time I checked, I don't think there's anyone alive anymore who has a 1.
Right.
I mean, because Erdős himself has passed away already, and I think most of the 1s are also gone. There are several 2s. But like you can imagine that, like, so if he did what would you say 1,525
papers?
All of that. That's how many people about how many people should have a 1 running around in the world. That's a ton of people, right? And then anybody they've ever worked with is going to be a 2.
Right.
So like, it's kind of like 4. By the time you're 4 degrees out, there's like almost everybody has a 4.
Yeah, I guess I'm less impressed now that you say it that way. I was super impressed originally. You should have just kept it there.
I know, but I got to be honest, right? Like
that's true. So it's just based on like doing research or
usually publishing a paper. You have to have like the way I understand it, it's measured by actual published.
Got it.
And you can actually like go online and type in your name and it'll tell you what it is because there are these databases of who's worked with whom.
Right.
You know, I love like Wikipedia to some extent when I'm just like clicking around because when I looked up Erdos, right? It talked about his numbers and then they talked about Euler, who was also just huge. And then I was like, oh, he published 800 and Euler was like huge. I mean, the entire branch of mathematics that you study was essentially born of Euler's work. So it's all this very interesting stuff. Anyway. Yeah. And see, I didn't even know that he did the stuff that you did, but when I clicked it and I looked, it was like, infinitesimal calculus, graph theory, and topology. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess that's a cool note to end the show on. But go ahead.
I just learned something really cool.
So thanks, Wesley, for joining us this week.
No problem.
And listeners, head down to higher-ed.social and get the links to the things we talked about today, including these Wikipedia links so you can learn more about Erdos and such. If you like the show, please give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We'd love to have it. And while you're there, why don't you also subscribe to the podcast? That'd be great. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. We love hearing from you. And don't forget to let us know if you want to be on the show. So thanks, Wesley, again.
No problem. Pleasure to be here.
Yep. And everyone have a great week.